It's not often in life when you can actually feel a big emotional bang and suddenly everything's changed. What you were seemingly a moment ago, you no longer are. It happened to Jenny Bryce just after she turned 50, and she fell through what she calls the glass trapdoor. Gosh, that sounds dangerous, Jenny. What's a glass trapdoor?
Well, what it is they talk about the glass ceiling, and I was very fortunate that I was able to get through the glass ceiling. But what was interesting is I didn't understand about the glass trapdoor.
you weren't waiting for that. You're just walking along, not looking down.
And suddenly I found myself falling down this trap, which was I hadn't prepared myself for what happened when I turned 50. Suddenly I was not employable. I'd had an amazing career, being the head of HR for banks and large companies within Australia. And I'd followed my partner, who was a CEO, around after his employment. And I'd come back to the eastern states to seek another job as a senior executive in HR. And I'll never forget the day that I went and saw one of the top recruiters in HR in Australia. And I'd worked with him many times in my previous life. And I said to him, I'm looking for a new job. And he sat there and he looked at me and he knew who I, you know, he knew me. And he said, Jenny, you've got to realise you've turned 50 now and that no one's going to employ you because they will consider this will be your last stint.
What had you been doing the week before this meeting?
Well,
I mean, you were perfectly employable the previous week.
I had been working in my own business because I had to, I was following my partner around and I'd moved to Tasmania. So when I came back, which was sort of like 2 years later, I was expecting that there would be no issue in getting another job. And when he said this to me, I might add, I didn't believe him. I thought, this is just not possible. I sort of was in shock and I was quite proud that I had grey hair. When I was 40, I thought, you know, grey hair, fabulous, you know, no more dying. Well, then I registered that grey hair was not a good thing. And I say that jokingly, but I have to tell you it's very symbolic.
Well, so what did you say to him in that moment?
I can tell you I was in shock. And I listened to what he had to say. And in my mind, I thought, I will show you.
You're wrong.
So you can imagine I know most of the senior headhunters in my capacity. So I went to a headhunter in Sydney. Now, remembering that I was happy to work in Queensland, New South Wales or Victoria. So I went to every state and spoke to people personally. And I spoke to one headhunter who I knew personally in Sydney. And he said to me, Jenny, the guy's absolutely right. And, you know, you should consider yourself lucky because you don't have to work.
What does that mean?
Well, because I was financially okay and I was 50, well, you know, sit back and put your feet up. You're lucky. You're one of the lucky ones because some women, and he used his wife and his partner as one of those, you know, they weren't as financially secure. And this just went on and on and on. And I just have to tell you the time when I registered that what the guy said to me, in all good faith, by the way, I went to a headhunter in Brisbane and he rang me up, about a week or so later, and he said, you know, I've got a job for you. It's on $80,000 a year being a one-man HR professional working in the Northern Territory. Who would take that job? Only someone who they thought would have no other options.
For context here, there's nothing wrong with an $80,000 HR job in the Northern Territory, merely that you had been earning many multiples of that in some of the most senior corporate roles in Australia.
That's exactly right. And felt I had a huge amount to offer. Please don't misunderstand the dollars. I was just using that as a comparison.
Sure.
In regards to, you know, you're not seen as valued. You're seen as the one that will probably take anything because no one else is taking the job.
Susan Ryan is the Age Discrimination Commissioner at the Australian Human Rights Commission. She's with us in the studio as well. Susan, you're not as surprised as I am.
Well, I'm not surprised. Every time I hear a story like that, I'm horrified, but I'm not surprised because I hear it all the time from women, from men, from high-functioning professionals like Jenny, or from people who are lower down the scale. It doesn't matter. age discrimination is prevalent across the workforce, and the story about going to the headhunter and the headhunter telling you what the case is, that is repeated again for people who go for less high-powered jobs. They go through recruitment agencies and they don't even get their CVs passed on when they apply for a job. So we do have a terrible crisis of age discrimination. It is absolutely destructive and wrong to say to someone of 50, your working life is over. Whether that person has a partner or has savings has got nothing to do with it. At 50, a healthy person, man or woman, can now expect to live into their 90s. So what are you supposed to do for 40 years? Now, if you have savings, which most women at 50 don't have, you live off those for a little while, you go on to Centrelink, it's tiny, it's very onerous in terms of looking for jobs. A lot of people end up, in that case, on disability support pension.
Jenny, you subsequently established your own business, a consultancy, and you had to report back to a client, an HR manager in her office. Tell me about that experience.
Yes, well, I've been very fortunate. I've got an executive coaching and facilitation business, and I also own my own little conference venue now, which is fabulous. And, you know, I've kept up with all the information and have been working in this field for many years. And I was very fortunate to be asked to coach two senior managers. And I went to see the HR manager and to tell her what I was doing. And she basically said to me, and I'll never forget it, she said, in your day, did you know about 360 degree feedback?
How old was this person?
She would have been late 30s. And I sat there and I honestly, you know how you've got to be very polite and nice and, you know, don't want to offend. I literally had to stare out the window. I was so enraged. I mean, most of us would know 360 is just a basic instrument. And in my day, now, I mean, I might be in my mid-50s now, but I have to tell you, I'm just an ordinary looking person with some wrinkles. I was just gobsmacked. And I just left there going, I cannot believe that I would be asked that.
Susan, is that an example of the sort of intergenerational friction that you found in your inquiry?
Yes, sadly I hear about it routinely through the inquiry and in my meetings with HR professionals and recruiters and so on. Although we should be aiming at a diverse workplace, in fact, where we have experienced older people and less experienced junior people who may have a management role in relation to the older person, we don't always get the harmonious team, you can do this, I can do that, let's team together kind of approach that we really need. I think it's one of the big challenges of the workplace in 2016 and for the future, because we are going to have mixed age in the workforce. We have to. We can't have all these people unemployed. But that will be a breakthrough, I think, when we get all of those who are managing workforces, be they large or small, to understand that getting the team, getting people to recognise that you can do something I can't do, but I can do something you can't do, so we're stronger together.
Age Discrimination Commissioner Susan Ryan there with HR professional Jenny Bryson. We're talking about the glass trap door. Jenny fell through it at the age of 50, as you heard, when she was told she was too old to work. We'd love your insights too in your stories. Perhaps you have an experience like Jenny's. Perhaps you work harmoniously with people of different generations in your workplace. Give us a call, 1300 225 576, 1300 225 576. Now let's hear more from Susan Ryan. We were talking about recruitment firms and how they manage to screen out older workers.
Executive search firms will say, recruiters will say, look, I provide the client, the employer who's looking for someone, with what I know they need, or sometimes what they say they need. It's no use my sending a very bright, capable 55-year-old because I know they don't want to hire anyone over 50.
So it's sort of a vicious circle.
It is a vicious circle. Sometimes the client has said to the search firm, we don't hire over 50. Often they haven't said that, but the search firm
understands,
assumes
that.
It. Mm-hmm. So we've got miscommunication stereotype thinking all around, and we need to break through this with a very clear-cut, objective way of saying, we've got these jobs, we need people with these skills, find me people who can match those skills, and then take the best.
Jen?
Yeah, well, I've done an exercise with senior executives trying to push this point in a nice way. And what I did was I put up a barrier between the executives so they couldn't see who was behind the barrier. Then what I did is I brought people in that they could not see, and they were to ask them a question like in an interview. So they couldn't see what they looked like. Can I tell you, when we put the, and then we said, tell me what you think these people are behind the barrier. Are they old, young, intelligent, capable, whatever else? They were amazed when the barrier was taken down that what their assumptions were based on their voice was often completely different to what they thought when they saw the person. Now, until we can put any policy in place, we can offer $10,000, we can do whatever, but until we hit people at an emotional level about what's going to happen, not a lot's going to change. And I'd just also like to add that the other thing is that I talk about these things, an example I say is to the people in the room. I was speaking at a breakfast the other day, and I said to the people in the room, tell me how many of you in the room are 35 or thereabouts? And then I said, is there anyone over 50? And I said to the people at 35, I said, can you remember when you were 20? And they said, oh, yes. I said, was it like yesterday? They said, yes. I said, well, in 15 years' time, you're going to be 50, and that's going to go in a flash. And unless you at 35 aren't thinking about, if you're not worried about the 50-year-olds now, you very soon are going to be 50, and you're going to have to think about how you manage your career much more effectively, or with not as obvious bias that we have now, because it's in your invested interest to do something about it.
There's not a problem with rationality in this argument. I mean, the Treasurer stands up every time and says we're going to up the pension age.
Yes,
you know, the intergenerational report says it makes logical sense to have people working longer through their lives. But in 2009, 2 million over 55s interested in work couldn't get a job. The government's giving away $10,000 if you employ an older worker. They were trying to get 32,000 people jobs. Susan, your office sent me the number. Do you know how many people have taken up that scheme? They haven't even cracked 3,000. Mm. So giving away free money isn't the answer.
No, it's not. And again, that program, while I tried to tell employers about it because it was something in place, doesn't really tackle the problem effectively. And I've been doing this national inquiry into employment discrimination against older people, and I've met with employers all sizes, all shapes, all over Australia and their organisations. And it's interesting that they don't, and I say, well, what do you need to do to change? What's holding you back? And wage subsidies doesn't feature very largely. It's more, we want to know what we're getting, we want to know what our duties are. If we employ an older person, they get health problems. Workers' compensation runs out essentially when someone's 65. People can't get their own insurance for income replacement during illness once they're in their 60s. So it's these other things, I think, that are holding employers back. And look, we've talked a lot about prejudice, and there is a lot of it, but there's also a lack of information. Yeah, employers, you know, when you say, well, look, have a look at the health statistics. People now are sort of 20 years younger in health terms than they were a generation ago. Mm. Have a look around yourself, you know, your friends, your colleagues. So we've got to kind of educate them. But at the same time, I often find the strongest, my most effective arguments occur when there's a shortage of particular skills. And then suddenly they say, oh, okay, just because this person's 52, I will have a look at them. And we have those skill shortages from time to time. Western Australian employers during the mining boom were hiring anyone who could do the job. They stopped worrying about age.
Well, Susan, you have till the middle of the year to come up with your findings for the Attorney-General from that National Inquiry into Employment Discrimination Against Older Australians and People with a Disability. In the meantime, Jenny, here's the question. I'm going to turn 50 any minute now. You actually were looking around thinking, well, everybody's having plastic surgery.
Yep.
I mean, I remember not so many years ago, people were at a television station offering me free botulism for my face.
Yep. It's unbelievable. I was asked to speak at an International Women's Day on developing confidence in women. And anyway, at the break, this lady came up to me and she said, and she was a senior woman, she was a lawyer, and she told me that she was 47. And she said to me, how have you got away with it? With not having plastic surgery.
Oh.
She said, I really, you know, she is worried that as soon as she starts looking old, what will happen is that they won't want her anymore. Now, I could talk at length about this subject alone. But to give you another example, I was coaching a woman who was the head of strategy, and we were talking a little bit about her career, etc. And she said, do you know how much it's cost me to look this young? There is so much pressure on people.
How'd she run up the bill?
Well, because she's refreshed every year.
Refreshed what?
Refreshed. You know, you get
no,
refreshed.
No, I don't. What does it mean?
Oh, Ellen. Ellen, refreshed means you've gone off and had, you know, Botox or fillers or whatever. Oh. And you know there's a difference between being refreshed and naturally refreshed.
Now I know what people are saying.
Yes.
You were also described by a man once as his mum.
Oh, yes. This was amazing. So I was asked by a very large company, and I'd been working for this for 2 years, and I was facilitating their leadership strategy workshops for the top 50 senior executives. And I had a good rapport with that company. And that top 50 changes occasionally. And one of the gentlemen that was a new guy on the team was actually driving me from the airport to the resort, and I hadn't met him before. And during that time, I had worked out that he was about 46. Anyway, I at the time was 52. We arrived at the resort, and all the guys were gathered around the front gate and whatever of the resort. And he got out of the car, I got out of the car, and he said to all the blokes, oh, this is my mum. Because he was embarrassed to get out of the car with an older woman. Now, I have to tell you, I had fabulous fun with that. After I pulled my sort of jaw off the ground and smiled, I was facilitating the 3-day conference. So
you had the microphone.
So guess what? I was saying, "Help now, son, help me understand what we should do there." I had a ball, but I turned it around. But how do you think it made me feel that he had to apologise basically for getting out of a car with and from an older woman who, I might add, was only 6 years older?
I would have said, well, if you were my son, you'd have much better manners. You're not a credit to your mother at all.
I wasn't that quick, but I did get back at some stage. And not only that, we drove back in the car together. And he said, did you have to give me such a hard time?
Was his concern that people would think that you were together, you were a couple?
Absolutely.
He should be so lucky.
Well, and that's the right, you know, that's the right approach.
You've got to be cheeky to these silly
Well, I
people.
Thought I'd, I think you absolutely do, but I think it's a classic example. This doesn't happen every so often. This happens so regularly. And one of the things that why I'm writing articles, why I'm talking about this particular subject, is I think that so many of us just go away, hide behind closed doors and family barriers and say, we'll be right, and sort of go away silently. I think this is too big an issue to be silent on. And I think that there's too much the country has at stake to lose this level of competence. And we have to hit people where it in their hearts, their emotions. They need to. How many people, for example, in Australia have parents who have been victims, and I don't mean that in a negative way, but of not being made redundant at 50 and not being able to get a job? I read a statistic recently that nearly blew me out of the water, which there are more people over 50 on the Work for the Dole schemes than there is under 22. This is happening with such silence and such stoicness in so many instances. We have to have a voice to say there is a lot that we can contribute, and we can't just throw money at it. We can't just ignore it. What we have to do is really get people to understand what it's going to be like for them and what's happening to their parents, their brothers and sisters, because if we don't hit it at that level, nothing's going to change in time, particularly if you're going to increase the time we're going to be working for.
It's a wonderful note on which to leave it. I've got to tell you, Susan Ryan was nodding away as you were saying all of that. Thank you both so much for your time.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And we were hearing there from HR professional Jenny Bryce and Age Discrimination Commissioner Susan Ryan. And did you hear, Jenny, there? This doesn't happen every so often. It happens all the time. Judging from your calls, that's quite right. Callie, what's your experience?
Well, I think this would be a great topic to cover on a weekly basis. I don't think one show can cover it. But I'm a very well-preserved 52-year-old, and it's very funny. I have helped so many people over 50, men in particular who are executives, change their CVs to get actually interviews because they didn't know what to put on it.
So how do you change your CV?
Well, what you need to do is you just need to not point out when you graduated from high school, and you need to maybe keep the dates off of your university so that you at least can get in the door, and then you can impress them with your knowledge. But most people just, they had this, I'll say it, it's an antiquated style of CV. If they've been in, they were in a job for 20 years, they got downsized, they wouldn't change their CV. They left it the way it was 20 years ago, and styles have changed. So that's one issue. The other is I see a lot of people over 50 who refuse to take less than what they think they're worth. They refuse to adapt to the changed market. And even 20 and 30-year-olds have had to adapt to a very competitive and lower-paying market overall.
That's interesting. So it's about zigging and zagging through your career, going up and being willing to go down. Thanks for that call. Eleanor, what's your experience?
Hello. I spent most of my life in science, in medical research, and at 50 I left my job as the technical manager of a neuroscience research lab at Canberra University. And I didn't leave because of sexism, but the culture was changing, or racism, or ageism. I left because it didn't feel right to be there anymore.
Why do you say that?
A lot of subliminal messages about being the old person.
What sort of things? What was said?
Back when we go for a run at lunchtime, you sure you're up to it today? Lots of talk about faces needing bits fixed, like you were talking about before. But I left, and that's 17 years ago, and I recreated my life. I went to massage school. I developed a training program to train massage therapists how to work with people with cancer. I'm teaching that in Spain later this year. So I found a place to become a different person. And as the lady before said, I was prepared to take the pay cut. You know, I haven't earned really very much money at all in the last 15 years or 16 years, but I've had a great time.
Susan Ryan did say that people are finding they need to get out of traditional workplaces and find a way to invent work for themselves so they can avoid ageism at work. John, what's your wife's experience?
Well, my lovely dear wife, Christine, she worked with DHS, that's the Department of Human Services, for about 10 years. She's 56 now. Now, when she was 55, she just decided to pull the pin, and she got qualified in teaching English as a second language. We went over to Bali. She got dengue fever.
Oh.
Came back, and then we realised that she perhaps couldn't go up into Thailand to teach where she wanted to, so she had to rejoin the workforce. And in the last 12 months, she's been offered three incredible jobs.
So she's had a very positive experience.
Staggeringly positive. In fact, I was driving home this morning and listening to the entire story, and it's so opposite to our experience that I thought I had to call in.
And so you've had a chance to think about it. What accounts for her at 56 not experiencing any of this, in fact the opposite, do you think?
Well, she looks great, but, you know, she obviously looks around about that age. She's got an incredibly positive attitude. She exudes warmth and kindness, and I guess the sort of work that she has got back into is sort of an investigative role. So she was offered an incredible job with Macquarie Bank, an incredible job with Commonwealth Bank, and she's finally taken an amazing job with the State Public Service, working for the Dust Diseases Board, where she, in her day-to-day role, investigates and helps people that have got mesothelioma and asbestosis. So a lot of her work's going to hospitals and taking declarations of people that are obviously pretty crook.
And they're obviously seeing that she has the ability and the life experience to do that kind of work. That's a fascinating experience. Terry, you spent years sending out CVs. What happened?
I went back to Sydney from Canberra after many years away from Sydney. This is in about 2003, 2004. And I thought I'll have a change of job and I'll try different things. So I applied online for all sorts of jobs. I must have put in 60, 70 resumes. And I heard back from two people.
Two?
One, yes. One of them acknowledged the receipt of the resume and the other one actually invited me in for an interview, and in the end I didn't get the job, not because of age, simply because they wanted somebody with a slightly different background, they said. So I accepted that.
How old are you, Terry, can I ask? You can't ask me, by the way. Only I can ask you.
I'm 69 now.
Okay. You're still looking for work?
No, I'm retired. I do voluntary work and I do part-time study.
So how did that story end up after 60 or 70 CVs?
I went back to... I was a journalist when I was young and I went back to a local newspaper group and a very nice woman was convinced I could still do it. I wasn't past it. And I did it for four years while I was in Sydney, and then my wife and I round up our time there and we came back to Canberra.
So it ended well. And what made the difference with that young woman, do you think?
I don't know, really. I think she was just realised I had a pretty strong background in work and editing and writing, etc. And she wanted, she realised that maturity and experience did count for something.
Yeah. Thank you so much for sharing that experience. We appreciate the call.
Okay, thanks.
And thank you for all those calls, the positive experiences and the not-so-positive ones. There's a bit of a theme developing there, isn't there? And one that I think our first caller, Callie, said we could continue to cover, and I think we will. You're listening to Life Matters with me, Ellen Fanning.